Okay. Hey.
Catch a vibe. We're gonna get you to the other side. Going you way back to the time. Reminisce and relax your mind. And catch a vibe.
Catch a vibe like a throwback. You with the bridge, about to turn it up. Picture perfect, no Kodak. And ain't no holdbacks. We getting real, getting raunchy. We bridge millennials, baby. We keep it saucy.
What's up, everybody? We are back in the building with a very exciting episode today. If you are new to this podcast, this is the Bridge Millennial Podcast. It's the only podcast that you need to know about, the only one you probably need to listen to. And if you ain't heard nothing about it, you under a rock. The Bridge Millennial Podcast is the shared perspective of the Bridge Millennial generation on culture, media, mental health, and society. I am Just Rob's World.
And I am Shannon Ashlea. What's good, everybody?
Yes. Oh, everybody, we out here rocking the big blue. Shout out to Autism Awareness Month. Shout out to here. We got a very special guest on today. She goes by Makeup Monster. She's out here in these streets doing it all. And she's here to speak about a very special event and a very special experience that she has that is going to be very enlightening for everyone listening. What's up, Danielle?
Hello, beautiful people.
Good. Hey, how Danielle. You feeling?
I'm good. Thank you guys for having me.
Yes. And this is a super special. This is a super special episode because you, for the season one, you're our last glitch homie.
I mean, come
on. Best for last.
Exactly. Yes, that's what's up. So we got a lot to talk about today. Let's go ahead and jump in to vital information.
And now, more vital information for your everyday life.
All right, so the first thing that I want to bring up is Mr. West. So I don't know if you guys heard, but lately Kanye has been stalking Kim. He has been doing the most. You know, the courts officially declared Kim single, but Jake Paul agreed to set up a celebrity fight. A celebrity fight, like a real like boxing situation between Kanye and Pete Davidson. And he said that if they agree to do this fight, he will give them each $30 million to walk away with, guaranteed.
Oh my goodness. Is this what it's come to? Is this what it's come to?
Yes. So Jake Paul said that he's sick of them going back and forth on social media, and he thinks that it's affecting the kids' lives, and he just wants them to fight it out so that it doesn't take a toll on the kids, and he is encouraging them to agree to this match. I don't know, like, what all is going to happen. You guys know the Grammys are actually airing tomorrow, April 3rd. They pulled Kanye from the rotation because of a lot of the things he has been doing in the media and also worried about Jake Paul's safety. So it's a lot taking place with Mr. West, and color me concerned.
Am I concerned? I don't know, maybe. Kanye, this is like the latest in a slew of erratic behavior by Kanye West. It happens every couple of years. I'm not sure what's going on there, but, you know, I do not like the way that he has been. I don't know what to call what he's been doing on the internet. It's definitely bullying. It's definitely airing
harassment.
It's definitely harassment, and he's airing out a lot of family business that I feel like he's just, I mean, he's stoking the fire, and I'm not really sure what he, like, what is his goal? What does he want to get out of it, you know?
Right.
How does this help you? I
don't know. You know, he moved across the street from them, and it's just been a lot going on, and I really respect that a lot of celebrities are speaking out and identifying his behavior as unacceptable. Stalking behavior, and mentioning that if he was any other person, this would have been considered stalking and harassment and handled by the law. But because he's a multi-bajillion fulfillionaire.
I also think that No, I think that people are like desensitized to Kanye's behavior also, because, you know, if this was any other celebrity doing this, it would be like a really big deal, or maybe at least a bigger deal. But I feel like people are used to Kanye just saying whatever it is he wants to say, and, you know, very dramatic, erratic behavior. And I think it's sad because it's like, that's just Kanye being Kanye. You also have people who are siding with him, but you're right. If he was a different person, I think that there would be a different response to his internet harassment. Now, I do support him not being able to do things. You know, you got to put him on what they call like a celebrity punishment. You know, you can't just be walking around on red carpets winning things while also disrespecting, harassing, stalking a woman publicly. But what do you think, Danielle?
What you gotta say, Danielle? Because I see your face. You lighting up like Pikachu over there.
I just went on a little rant. I'm so sorry.
It's so funny you guys said that, because I literally, we, the girls, and I just talked about this. And for me, it's, I take it to heart only because I've experienced it. And I still don't get how people just go, I mean, well, he loves her. I mean, no, it's not a big deal. It's a big deal when somebody pop up out of corners. It's a big deal when they start peeking out of bushes. And I don't get it. And I don't care who you are. And that's the issue I'm having. But it's Kanye, and Kanye's nuts. I said what I said. It's just not okay. Like, that is the scariest. From experience, that is the scariest thing in the world. And when you don't have people that take you seriously about it, or just shove it under the rug, like, it'll be okay. It's always okay until it goes too far, if you get what I'm saying. It's always okay until, oh my God, slow singing and flower bringing. I just don't get it. And I don't understand why people take it so lightly. So for me, I took it real personal.
And just to clarify to everyone, slow slinging and flower bringing is, that's the funeral. That's the... You know what I mean? Just so that y'all know that it actually does go there.
That far.
I'm concerned. I hope that he doesn't show up at the awards tomorrow. I hope that he doesn't make commotion. And I really hope that Kim, as an attorney, is pulling some strings to protect herself and her family. The fact that Kanye is not in jail, I credit to the fact that she feels sorry for him. Because she got some privilege. All right. And I just don't see. I feel like if she would have made a bigger deal, not that she's responsible for it, but I feel like she's holding back because of him.
Well,
because
I think that she's like doing this thing where, you know, she's living her life. She chooses not to respond. And you know that grinds people's. You know that makes him go even harder because she's not acknowledging him. And that is part of that attention is, you know, he wants that attention. He wants to say, hey, I'm not being treated fairly. Look at what this family did to me. Blah, blah, blah. But it's just like, at the same time, Kanye, like, not only is it borderline abuse what you're doing right now, but like, nobody cares. Nobody put a gun to your head and say, marry Kim Kardashian. Nobody said do that. Nobody said immerse yourself in that family, in that situation, and that money. Nobody told you to do that. That was a personal choice. Your choices led you here.
I don't even think it's about the family, though. I think he's making it and he's like deflecting. You know, it's that narcissistic thing that people do where it's really not about what they're saying it's about. It's just, hey, I'm a spoiled brat. Please see me. You know what I mean? See me. And that's really what he's doing.
Well, I'm sure he loves his kids, but I guess I say all that to say, you know, now he has kind of like started, you know, and this started maybe like a couple years ago when the rumors of divorce started happening, but he started to villainize the family instantly. Before, you know, he's defending the family, you know, he's singing a different tune right now, but a lot of people just really don't care. And I think that it goes with what you said, like, because we know that this is not about you feeling like the family is evil. I don't even believe that. I don't believe that he believes that. But it is about attention, like you said. So
Well, best believe we are going to continue to follow that story and find out what is really going on and what the results is. And I hate to say this publicly, but I think that they need to hit them with the books, because this just sets a really bad tone for what is acceptable in terms of how women are treated in our society by people in power. So we're going to continue following this. I want to jump over to something exciting, y'all. Okay. Ha! Listen, so they're making a show. I think it's out right now on Showtime about Michelle Obama. It's called The First Lady, and it's a show following the American leadership through the lens of the First Lady. So guess who's going to be starring as Michelle Obama?
Oh my gosh, who?
Viola Davis.
Of course.
You know she gonna do it. And I don't know if you saw the promo, but she looked, the way they did her, they look so,
similar. I'm excited.
Like, they did her right. Mm-hmm. Michelle Pfeiffer is going to be Betty Ford, and Gillian Anderson is going to be Eleanor Roosevelt. And the series is just developing their personal and political lives, even getting into the White House, exploring everything from their journey to Washington, their family life, and world-changing political contributions, and impacts that the White House have had on women. I saw one of the clips where Viola, in character of Michelle, was saying that they were trying to make her like a Black Martha Stewart. They wanted that to be her image, and she was fighting against that. So, and we're glad that she did, because Michelle ate that presidency just like Barack did. So I'm really excited. I'm pretty sure it's on. I know it's Showtime original, so I'm pretty sure it's on. So go check that out, because we gotta. There isn't too many accounts of politics through the lens of women, so we gotta go support that.
I love a good behind the man is the woman mm-hmm. story. yes, I love ma'am. That girl power. We're coming out of Women's History Month, so still on that feminine wave. Let's go, Viola. She is just, I mean, once you got Viola on the camera, you don't have to worry.
That's all you need.
About anything. You don't have to worry about it. She got it. She gonna cry that one That's little snot, mean. But that little snot, the drip of snot's gonna come out of her
nose. If she cries as Michelle Obama, I'm gonna cry. Like, I can't.
Well, you don't think Michelle cried in the presidency? Of course she gonna
cry. I know,
cry.
But I can't. It's gonna hit. Like,
yes.
It's gonna be gut-wrenching.
When you see that snot, that's how you know. That's that vulnerability right there.
Not the snot.
I love Viola. I do. Ooh, How to Get Away with Murder. Yes. And other things. But How to Get Away with Murder is how I really, like, got on her. That was, like, what introduced me to, like, Viola and her purse. Okay?
Right. Okay. And then the last thing I have for vital information today, I told you that we was going to follow up with this story. Jussie Smollett. He was released from prison after 5 days into his sentence. 5 days into his sentence, they released him as they were afraid for his life. I don't know if you guys saw the footage of him getting convicted, where he made that scene about if he dies, he's not suicidal, he didn't commit suicide. And these are things that are serious. These are very serious issues with our justice system. It's very serious issues with just policing of men and holding men in captivity versus rehabilitation. So this is pretty serious. But he was released 5 days into his sentence. Now, his peers have been very vocal in saying that the crime did not match the punishment. Miss Tina Knowles spoke out on that. Some of his castmates from the show, Empire. They've spoke out about it. They said that they don't think that it was fair, basically. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I hear you. I honestly don't really feel like I could even, like, put a put my opinion into whether or not he should be going to jail for this. My concern is if we can acknowledge that jail is dangerous for Jussie, why do we not acknowledge that jail is dangerous for other Black men? Because I can't imagine a situation where a Black man would have just been like, I don't feel safe, and got released from jail. You know, so it's like, for me, I'm just feeling like if that's going to be acknowledged, can we carry that logic across the board? But
yeah.
No, they can't, because he's a celebrity. And, you know, that was celebrity privilege, because any old regular Joe Schmo Black man is not going to be able to leave jail 5 days into the sentence because they are afraid for their lives. That's not even a thing. So
I'm not even going to lie. Once I saw the release, I was immediately annoyed. I was like, really? This is what we're doing? Oh, okay. It immediately annoyed me because I was confused. When he did what he did, everybody was just like, oh my God, is he okay? To find out he did it. And now I'm not going to lie. Even when he made his speech in the courtroom, it was kind of like, is this genuine? Because you are an actor. So
yeah, it was very performative. When he was, you know what I mean? I feel like he was making that scene with the intentions on being released 5 days later due to safety. It seems like he put that bug out there because that's what the strategy was. Yeah.
I was just literally thinking, like, he planted the seed so that later he could say, because I was just thinking, like, who was he? Was it the cellmates? Was it the other, like, prisoners? Was it supposed to be the guards? Like, how was he in danger just all around? Like, that seems like, how would you know ahead of time? It's very like, It was premeditated for him to say that. I totally agree with you. And how long did he actually get? What was his sentence? 90 days, like 3 months or something like that? Am I tripping?
A
year probation?
It was, like 100
some time. I don't remember exactly what he was looking at, but he was looking at some time. It wasn't
like what?
No slap on the wrist, but I don't remember exactly what it was. But I agree with you 1,000%. I feel like he went on record to say that he's not suicidal, and if something happens to him, and I think that set a judicial precedent that if something was to happen to him, he's already said he's not suicidal, versus if you were in jail and something happens to you, now you got to get assessed to determine whether it was possibly suicidal intent. So it was something. And also, I will note that he didn't look particularly bothered at his sentencing, as if he knew he was getting out in 5 days anyway. So, that's that.
Well,
he didn't look like a person that was about to lose his freedom and possibly lose his life. He was just like,
Well, I looked his sentence up. It's 150 days. So that's what, like 4.5 months or something like that, right? But I think he had like probation. He had probation, I think, for either 1 to 3 years afterward, though. So I think the probationary period was pretty long. But I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, I'm glad that he has people advocating for justice when they feel like justice is not served. I mean, that is America. We love that they have the ability to do that. And I'll keep it there.
If he doesn't use his platform to advocate for justice of other inmates in regards to that situation, I'm gonna be very upset. I'm gonna be very upset.
He's not going to.
Because you were willing to send Black man to prison on a lie, and now you're getting out of jail because you're saying prison is too dangerous. It just
prepare to be
I'm
upset.
That, I'm gonna leave that right there, but that's prepare what we to have. Be upset.
Selfish is as selfish does. So.
Right. So that's what we got for vital information today. So we're going to swing it to Shannon for our Wake Back When.
I actually love those topics. And I think it's really interesting how you brought up Michelle Obama, who is going to be in a new, who's going to be featured in a new show. I want to talk about some cool, I guess I would call it what ifs today. Today is all about what ifs. So let's hop back into Way Back When.
What we gonna do right here is go back. Way back. Back into time.
So today I have a couple of questions for you. And this was sparked by a session my friend and I had. We just started to speculate about a biopic on Kamala Harris. And, you know, we got into like who would play Kamala in a movie. And so we had a lot of fun with it. And so it kind of inspired me today with the Way Back When. So I have two questions that I am going to pose to you all. And so really think long and hard about it, or maybe you don't have to, maybe you already know. So the first question is going to be music based. So are you ready?
Yes.
Yeah.
So thank you. I like that. Yes. So the first question is, if there was one album that could be the soundtrack of your life so far, what would it be? I'm going to repeat that question.
Wild.
If there was one album that could be the soundtrack of your life so far, what would it be?
So, album of my life. I feel like my go-to would be a Frank Ocean album. I feel like his music. But see, I'm not, because there's also J. Cole and K.O.D. or Kids on Drugs was really good. The Off Season was yeah. I would definitely pick The Off Season. That would be the album of my life. His latest.
The Off Season. Who was that by?
J. Cole,
The Off Season. And tell us why. Why did you pick this album? Give us a little insight.
I picked that album because the energy on the album is very healing and very reflective. And I feel like that album captures the moment of me overcoming, and it puts me in the mindset that if I could pick it for my future, like, I feel like that's most applicable to my destiny. There are some songs on the album that is really, really deep. Like, he got this song called Pride. Pride is the Devil, and it's just, I don't know. It transcends through whatever stages of life that I'm going through. It's kind of like the theme. So that's why I picked that. And it's a bop.
Okay.
It's Jermaine Cole. You know what I mean?
I'm going to have to give that a listen. I actually haven't heard it yet. So that's big ups from Big Rob. So I think I'll give that a try. Okay. Danielle, are you ready?
Yes. I actually have a lot, but off the top of my head, I would actually go with the Waiting to Exhale soundtrack.
Wow. Ooh, I know that's okay, right. Girl. Okay, tell us why.
I know that's right.
So many different elements that each woman went through, and I feel like it's just so many different stages, the breakups, the anger, the oh my God, and then the sisterhood. So it was, you know, and I thank God I actually have some sisters that I can lean on now, because I think I went through that stage where I was like, let me just light this calm fire and walk away real quick, because you played too much. You know what I mean? So it was every aspect. So yeah, off the top of my head, the Waiting to Exhale soundtrack for sure.
Okay, that was like a beautiful explanation. I love that. Okay, so I would have to choose the album by Jhené Aiko, her last album, Chalumbo. And for starters, she did a lot of like sound healing on the album. And so she did some research about different notes and chords that are healing. So it's, you know, throughout the album, and it's intertwined in the music, and it puts me in a calming space, number one. And there are a lot of different subjects on that album. She kind of was, I guess, had gone through a breakup, but really had been finding herself. And I feel like so far, that's kind of been like the nucleus of my story, just kind of finding myself and, you know, dating people and growing up and realizing that, like, I'm bad as shit on my own, you know, as well. So that album, that's an album that really spoke to me, especially when it came out. So we're going to go with that. Okay, so I do have another question for you. Yeah, that was a fun question. So I have another question for you. So this time we're kind of going to go on the film side of it. Who would you cast to play you in the movie of your life? And this could be multiple people, of course, because this is a biopic. You might have a young version of you and an older version of you. So yeah, what do you, who wants to go first?
Wow. I'll go first. Good. I'll go first. Okay. Oh man. This just takes me back because before I moved from New York, the last creative project I was working on was a play, which was inspired by my life, playwriting with the, organization out there. So this is cool. Who would I pick? I think that it's hard because when you pick biopics, you want to pick someone that kind of resembles you, but it's hard because then there's people that
resemble you within reason.
Every biopic, they did a decent job. Yeah,
within reason, if they can transform them to look like you, then I would say yes. And you know they can do a lot with movie magic, so hair and makeup, honey.
Hmm. I feel like I would have to pick Mac Wilds. I feel like Mac Wilds, he's from, you know, New York City. He is very underground and he's a great actor. He's an amazing actor. I think that with some movie magic, the transformation would be fair. But I'm not married to it. If it didn't have to look like me, I think Lil Nas X I would prefer because I would like the reception of the audience. I feel like there's a certain annoying distaste that you have for him, like almost like he's the villain. Mm-hmm. So I would want to kind of spark that emotion to portray like the emotional things that I've gone through, especially as a child, and being targeted like with homophobia, with weight, with height, all of that stuff. And I think that the audience watching Lil Nas X in that vulnerable space would have a breakthrough with him. So I would pick someone that is queer or fluid to play me.
I like that. Okay. I feel like they can get Lil Nas X to look like you.
Can they?
Maybe. They can. That's what I said. Within reason. I mean, y'all are, you know, close in complexion. As long as y'all are, like, they can do anything with movie magic.
They can do something, right?
Mm-hmm. Can we not use him for you?
We would have to. I feel like when I was growing up, I was treated like a disease. Like I was treated like something people didn't want to stand next to. So the only way that the audience can feel that is if they have the same automatic prejudice towards the character that's playing me without knowing that person. And then as the journey goes on, that person unfolds and you become to have love and respect for that person. So I feel like it would have to start off with someone that the audience just doesn't like.
Okay. Are you ready, Danielle?
Yeah, but I'm like torn. So like for like
it can be multiple people because you just never know who's gonna get the part. Okay.
Right. Who you want to audition?
Literally for like the emotional, like you said, the crying and the snot. I would really want Viola for that.
Come on, Viola. But
some of the like beastly, if I get my hands on you, it would be Monique from like Precious when she was like, all right, I'm run up these stairs, you finna catch it. And for just a little sassy, silly, I don't remember her name, but she's from when she did Waiting to Exhale, when she's like, oh my God, I hope he's not looking at me walk away.
I
always loved her.
What is her name? Loretta Devine.
Yes.
Loretta.
A lot of people say the way
You don't need Monique. Loretta can do that.
Loretta can do that. I see that.
Loretta can do that. Don't fuck around with Loretta. Like, Loretta can do that.
A lot of people have always said, I'm like her. Like, some of my quirky ways reminds them of her.
I can see that.
Shout out to Loretta. Honestly, she has that voice. Just, you know her
voice. She's just, there's one other person, but honestly, we're going to go with Loretta. Overall. Okay.
Yeah. I love it. We're
going to go with
Mm-hmm. Let's go with Loretta. Okay, so, you know, I assume, of course, I have to get into the details. So if I'm, this is a biopic, I assume that this will be later on in my life. So if these people like virtually never aged, because of course, who knows who's going to be out, you know, when I'm older. But so for the young, like me in my 20s, I would like Coco Jones. You know, she is the Hillary in Fresh Prince. Yes.
Absolutely.
Oh, she's so cute. I absolutely love her. Like, I would like her to be Howard me. The me at Howard University and throughout my 20s. And then let's say for somebody slightly older, like older than me, I would say like Gabrielle Union, because she has that, like, you know, she has that presence. She has that kind of like, she knows what she wants type thing going on. So I could definitely say Gabrielle Union. And let's throw somebody else in there for shits and giggles. There is a girl. Have you all ever seen the show Titans?
I haven't.
I feel like I have.
It is. It's like a Teen Titans, but it's like a live show in there.
I heard of it. I don't think I've seen it, but yeah.
But there's a girl on there who plays a Star. I think she, is that her name on there? Star? She's like from another planet. She has this beautiful, like, pink, like, I don't know, natural hair. It looks so good. Her name is Anna Diop. I would like her. Look her up. I like her a lot, too. She's got some attitude. You know, I love me a melanated sister with some attitude. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, those people would be great. Actually, okay, I do have one more thing. This is like, this was a maybe, but I feel like we have enough time. Am I right, Rob?
Yeah, we're doing great on time.
Okay, so the last thing that I want to touch on is, okay, so we were talking about biopics, which I love. So I want to know, which one is y'all's favorite biopic from your childhood? What is the favorite biopic from your childhood? And I mean, these can be stories about musical groups, musical artists. You know, you got like What's Love Got to Do with It. You have you have the Temptations story. You have other stories that were loosely based on things like Dreamgirls was based on the Supremes and Diana Ross. So you can kind of go anywhere. And then later on in the 2000s, TLC had a movie. They came out with a Whitney movie. So those are just like examples. Do y'all have any favorites? Because I definitely have a favorite.
My number one of all times, and I could watch it over and over and over again, is The Temptations.
Oh my God, I knew you was gonna say that.
Listen, the one who played Otis, I had the biggest crush on him. The one who played Otis. And then it would be like The Jacksons after.
American Dreams. Okay, I like that.
The Temptations is number one for sure.
So I'm going to say The Temptations for me is number one, because that Temptation movie, it's got everything. It's got, you know, ambition. It's got joy. It's got sorrow. You know, it's got racism. It has nuance. It has sex. Like, it's so well-rounded. I think that movie is like 4 hours long. But Temptations is up there for me. And then I would have to say after The Temptations would be Dreamgirls. Dreamgirls was super big when it came out. And I you know, at that time, I think I was junior in high school. I wasn't familiar with the original Dreamgirls on Broadway. So this was my first introduction to it as well. And I don't know, the music just moved me. I love to see, because you don't get many Black musicals, you know. So that was something to me that just, nothing topped that. So yeah, I'm going to say Dreamgirls.
The version with Beyonce, you're saying?
The version with Beyonce, the movie, yes.
You were where, in high school?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, I was. Yes, I was. And she said, let me get this timeline straight. I graduated from high school in 2007. I am 32 years old. I will be 33 soon.
I'm old.
Black, don't crack. We respect the age. We respect the age, sis.
Yes.
But okay, what about you, Rob?
It would have to be a tie. My first go-to... Well, first of all, shout out to The Temptations. I am still a Temptations fan. Like, I'll still listen to Temptations music now.
Boom.
I can't claim it because I've never seen it. I haven't seen And I want to so bad, just so I could see that scene where he came and took that mic. I know you won't.
There are plenty of Leon moments. He said that he had ad-libbed a lot of those lines that, like, don't nobody come to see you, Otis. He ad-libbed that line. That wasn't even on the script. And he said that everybody on set was getting really pissed at him because he was, like, doing the most as his character. But it was method acting. Yeah, it was method acting. But he was saying that he was, like, being a real dick on set. And everybody did fucking hate him. But it was great for the movie.
That was good. But in terms of what I've seen, my number one, I got two. So number one will be American Gangster. That was Denzel Washington. He played American Gangster Frank Lucas. So that one, I feel like that one hit home for me. And it was like, it was some real shit. It was some real shit in here. The next one was kind of semi-based. It was A Bronx Tale. A Bronx Tale. That was like the Romeo and Juliet story. So I was into that. And I'm not even into romance like that. But that one, for some reason, just was like, I don't know. Maybe it's because I grew up there. I don't know. But anything in the South Bronx, I'm here for it. So. Those was my two.
Okay. I love
but
it.
But I would be finding that Temptations. Isn't there two Temptations movies? Which?
No.
It's only one?
I'm going to find it. Positive.
I will be watching it tonight because I want to see
Just look for the one with Leon.
Leon, yeah.
Yeah. Also, honorable mention, it was like a 4-part series that BET did on New Edition. That was good too, y'all. That was a good one. Check that out. Y'all check that out if y'all haven't seen that. I believe you can access that like through your Prime membership. But that one was really good too. And I hear that Bobby Brown is coming out with his own like story soon as well. So that's a little spoiler for you all. Bobby Brown is working on his biopic. I think it might be on Lifetime. You know how they spit them out. But look out for your boy. And that's all we have for Way Back When today.
Okay, so thank you for that, Shan. Let's get to know Makeup Monster. Let's get to know Danielle. Can you tell us why you here today? What you doing on the show today, Danielle? What you doing on the show? Why we wearing this blue? Why we repping this like this? Like, why we doing
this
that?
This right here?
What's this for?
This right here? This is because we are repping Autism Awareness Month. We're going to light it up blue on this whole screen right here. We're just lighting it up blue.
Blue, big
for
blue.
For my baby, you know?
Yes. Shout out to Adonis.
And all the awesome kids out there.
Yes. Tell us about the blog that you started for Autism Empowerment.
So it's gonna drop in April, but it's called He's Awesome. Spelled A-U-S-O-M-E. It's just about my son more so, and letting people be aware. And what made me want to do it was the experience we had. Unfortunately, my baby had COVID, and it was like very bad to the point where he almost died. But just the treatment in the hospital, and I was so shocked at how unaware even people in the medical field was about autism. So I was like, aren't you guys doctors? I was so shocked. They were so unaware of autism or how to handle someone with autism. So that's what triggered it. So while in the hospital, I hit up Rob like, this is something I need to do, because it shocked me so badly.
Yeah. And that was his first time in the hospital, right?
Yeah.
So yeah.
I was so wow. bad, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A few episodes back, like in the middle of this season, we did a mental health and society talking about seeking treatment for mental illness. And I was very candid in saying for Shannon and whoever our guest was that you want to get more than one opinion. And the reason why is because, unfortunately, people in the medical field are not professed in understanding mental health from a mental behavioral type of stance. And they don't get that much training. There's a lot of doctors that just don't touch it because they don't want anything to do with it. So it's still very much stigmatizing. So I'm sure that was a pretty heartbreaking experience for you to be in the presence of licensed professionals not knowing a very typical and very popular diagnosis.
Wow. Okay. So what would you want, like, what if you could do a TED talk with everyone, what would you want everyone to know about people with autism?
Just, they're not stupid. And people seem to think when you hear autism, oh my God, they can't think right, they can't. Believe it or not, a lot of people fail to realize some of them are actually smarter than us. They just, I like to say they're wired differently. So for us, we're going to be like, hey, I'm going to put this cup here. And for them, it's like, but why would you put that cup there? Not because we putting a cup there is right. They just know how to look at everything from a different perspective. We're like straightforward, and they just look at it from every angle. And because of who we are, we tend to go, well, because everybody else in the world looks at it this way, then you have to be wrong and something has to be wrong with you. And that's not the case. A lot of people fail to realize there are lawyers, doctors, policemen, engineers who has autism. It's not something that stops you. I always say, mm-hmm. that's why I call them awesome. You know what I mean? It's not a disability. It's a different ability. And I need people to understand that. You know what I mean? And I hate with a passion when they go, oh, yes, you have a child with a disability. I don't have a child with a disability. I have a child with a different ability. He doesn't have a disability.
Adonis is plenty able. Hello. He's plenty able. He got extra abilities.
Come on now. Let me tell you something.
That is my boy.
This week that passed, you know, they were talking about all the tornadoes and stuff in Texas and all the other places. And he came downstairs and the news is on and he said, excuse my language, he's like, oh, damn. And I'm like, sir? He was like, well, what happened? What is this? And I was well, it was a tornado. He said, oh, my God, a tomato. Did they know to go downstairs? Because when there's tomatoes, you're supposed to go downstairs. Did they know that?
How does he know that?
Because they learn all these things in science class. And
absolutely.
Like, you know, and I'm like, tornado? He's like, I said tomato. I say, yes, sir. You know what you're saying. You know what I mean?
Oh.
Just assume they don't know. But
yeah,
they know.
Absolutely. We have a very jaded view of mental health. But for the record, some of the biggest pioneers that changed the world were on the spectrum. Albert Einstein, mm-hmm. on the spectrum. the guy who started Tesla, Elon Musk. He is autistic. And the thing about people with these different abilities is a large part of a sensitivity. And when you have heightened sensitivity, you connect and you absorb more. You know what I'm saying? It's just like being just like artists. A lot of people who are autistic are creative, but you absorb more. So you need a different system to process that information than what people are typically organizing, because they're not getting as much input as you are. So one of the lifelong struggles with people who have autism, they are figuring out how to regulate themselves, considering all of the things that they're sensitive to. And if we lived in a world where everyone else was more sensitive, it wouldn't be a problem. So they're learning to live in your world, but they're also learning to live in their own world as well. And learning how to become quote unquote socially or whatever appropriate. Because all that they're doing makes perfect sense. It just doesn't make sense to you. But you're not experiencing the world as they're experiencing it. And that's a good thing. That's why we need people that experience the world very differently, because we get these breakthroughs in science, math, technology, engineering, art. We get that through people that see the world non-traditionally, but also very different. And
like, oh, yeah. Say, oh, it's raining. And they're like looking at the actual individual raindrops. Like, no, this one is... We don't pay attention to as much details as they do. And mm-hmm. for us, it's like, oh my God, that's weird. Whereas for them, it's like, how do you not see this? Like, it's right there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's I think that what has helped, I think, is just representation. Like, being able, for me, is being able to watch certain shows and kind of get a glimpse into, you know, what it might be like to have a sibling or a family member that has autism, or, you know, work in that field. I recently watched a show, I believe it was on Prime. What is this show called?
Is it Atypical?
So Atypical is on Netflix, and I love that show too. So Atypical is a good one. But there was a show on Prime as well, and it had basically some adults with autism and their journey of living on their own. It was a scripted show.
What is it called? Based off of a book, right?
It might be based off of a book.
Yeah.
I think it is based off of a book.
Real quick. Oh, it's called As We See It. It's called As We See It. So if you all haven't checked that out, As We See It on Prime and Atypical on Netflix. I know that it's not real life, but I believe that their depictions are pretty accurate, and you can kind of just get a feel or just some more information about it, because I feel like, you know, we always talk about this, but the unfamiliar is scary to people. So if we educate ourselves more about it, and maybe you can give us some resources and some other things that we can check out, because I think that's just kind of how we start to make a change on, you know, how people are treated, is an understanding. Because like you said, it was very shocking to you to see that the people in the medical field, you know, were not familiar. So other than that, like, what are things that we can do to make people aware and to kind of spread awareness? How can we normalize it? That's what I'll say. How can we normalize it?
Well, for starters, I always tell people, stop looking at my son like he's different. Because people aren't aware of the fact that he knows you're treating him differently. And once you start treating him differently, then he's going to look at you like, what are you doing? So stop treating them differently. Speak to them as normally as possible to the capacity that they can understand. Because even like an example in the hospital, they're like, oh, so mom does he? And I'm like, and you can ask him because he can speak. Don't ignore him. You know what I mean? Because they will literally ignore the person and speak to somebody else around them. Like, I work in the field with adults with mental disabilities. And when I take them to the doctor, they do the same thing. Oh, so does he? He can speak. You speak to him. He can speak. So just acknowledge that there are human beings. They can express themselves and they can explain. And for those who can't, like, there was a time when my son, and I thank God he's gone through so many stages and he's grown so much. There was a time where he couldn't understand, like, if he, say he pinched you and you're like, ow, and he's looking at you like, well, why are you saying ow? Because he couldn't understand that he was hurting you. For him, he's just doing normal things. So you just express, hey, this hurts. Just break it down to them. Sometimes, some of them, depending on, you know, the level that they're at, they may not even understand facial expression. So they can't differentiate between sad, happy, or whatever. They actually have a doll now that they can use. I don't like the doll. But there's a doll that shows the facial expressions and things like that. They have ways in which they have the books that shows them. But for you, just speak to them as normally as possible. Don't ignore them and speak to the parent. Don't talk about them in front of them. Like, I've had people go, oh, so he has autism. So what's that like? And I'm like looking at them like, so you don't see my son standing here? You just can't do that. You know what I mean? They're human beings, treat them as such. You know what I mean? And then you also have to train the younger kids. Because kids can be so mean on a normal basis. But kids, for some reason, can tell more than an adult can. They can see, like, oh, there's something a little different there. And some kids are very receptive and nice. And there's some kids that are just nasty. So you have to, just like any other adult, just train them to be nice. Like, be nice. They have feelings. And if, especially if they're like my son, because my son will come and say, he's being mean to me and I don't like what he's doing. He's mean. You know what I mean? Also be aware of sometimes stimulation. If it's, they're overstimulated, you just got to be patient with them. Because there was a time when my son, if something was too loud, he was just like, he couldn't take it. It's just too much. But one thing I've noticed is they can't take our loud, but they can definitely take their loud. So you have to be understanding, like, what, I honestly believe it has to do with, like, how do you say it? Like tones and things like that. You know what I mean? Like the levels on keys in which they hear, that certain sounds is very irritating to them. You know what I mean? I've actually been to places where I've seen children just sit on the floor and just hold their heads and mom and dad is embarrassed. It's too much stimulation. You got to be understanding of that. And there's some people, well, why is he on the floor? I've even had that happen to me when my son was about 5 and he had to go to the emergency room because he was having an asthma attack. And he calmed down, but afterwards he was like, okay, I'm ready to go now. And when they say they're ready, you have to be ready. They say what they mean and they mean what they say. You never have to guess like this is, no, they said what they mean. And for him, it's, I'm ready to go. And I'm like, you have to wait for the paperwork. So for him, he chose to lay down on the floor. I chose to stand over him so that if any gurneys or anybody walks by, they won't hurt him. But he's not screaming. He's not yelling. He just wants to lay there. And that's his way of decompressing. You know, and I had the nurse go by. Well, why is he on the floor? Well, why are you in my business? Don't worry. He's not screaming. He's just laying there. Understanding is what it takes. Like, just being understanding. Some people don't even know. And be understanding not only of them, but of the parents. Because there are times when there's those meltdowns. I remember sitting on the floor, wrapping him, like wrapping him, and he's screaming at the top of his lungs and he's sweating, but I'm squeezing because pressure helps also. So he's screaming and I'm squeezing and he's screaming and literally he just calms down and lays back on me. And my family is just, you know, my sisters and everybody's just like, oh my God, is he okay? But I'm like, yeah, he just needs this moment. Like, we have our way of handling when we're stressed and we need our moments. They have their way. Just be totally understanding. And then don't go to mom, but what, hey, mom, can I take over? Because mom and dad needs that break, too.
Yeah.
It's a lot, you know, so. And there's so many different levels to it. So.
Well, thank you for sharing that bit of like, you know, because I know that was very personal, but we appreciate it because it's important to have that understanding and it's important that we share that with our listeners. This is a safe space.
Yeah.
So how is Adonis doing now? How's he?
Fabulous. He gets speech, OT, and therapy. And in his therapy sessions, he gets to say, I'm sad, or she teaches him how to express, I'm sad, or I'm happy, or why does this make me sad, and teaches him how to breathe and count down and calm down. Because there was even a time where, I don't know if it's that people didn't understand him, but he chose to be mute. He was a selective mute. So it's just like, he would just look at you and he refused to talk. Like he was just, it was like a good 6 months. And we were just like, what? And I will say something too, that a lot of people don't know. It's not what you think where they're born in immediately. Like, okay, this is what it is. My son was walking at 6 months. And by the age of one, he can say every letter of the alphabet from A to Z, every sound it made. And on his second birthday, he just stopped talking. And he just stopped doing everything. And we were just like, what happened? You know what I mean? Then we started noticing different stems. For people who don't understand, stems are like different stimulation, things they do for stimulation. So it would be the tapping of the fingers. And then he'll start making little humming sounds, and then he'll start mimicking things. He loved George, Curious George, so then he will start making the sounds that the monkey made, but he wouldn't speak other than that. And I'm talking about he just woke up one day. And for us, we were so totally confused. And we were just like, what just happened? You know what I mean? So sometimes it's not they're born and you know. Sometimes they're not even diagnosed till some people are diagnosed at age 30. Thank God I was in the field and I was able to see certain things. And I was like, something's not what it used to be. So because of that, I was able to get him what he needed sooner, you know. And now he's doing a lot better, like watching the news. And it's just like, do they know?
That's what's up. Yeah, he told us what we need to. He knew what we need to do in a tomato. I didn't even know. I was like, is this a tornado? Like, what do we do? I should have called Donis, but
go downstairs.
Thank you so much for sharing that. We're actually going to dive a little bit more into that later on with mental health and society. We're going to throw it back to Shan.
Let's get into our red light district conversation for today. We're going to be delving into some relationship talk. So let's get into it.
I want to be touched and feel it so much because everybody needs some good loving.
Yeah, if I need it in the morning or the middle of the night,
I have to find the bed.
So today, I don't know why this was on my mind, but I wanted to talk about open relationships today. I don't know why I want to talk about open relationships, but open relationships fall under the umbrella term of consensual non-monogamy or ethical non-monogamy. So CNM or ENM, that's what they're calling it these days. Those are kind of interchangeable. But it basically means you're not in a monogamous relationship, but you know, you're being truthful and honest about it. All parties have consented to whatever the situation is and whatever is going on. And they should be enthusiastic about it, anybody involved. So I kind of wanted to get your opinion on open relationships. Like for me growing up, you know, we always would hear like Will and Jada, they're in an open thing. Like everybody used to always kind of like speculate about that. And it was like for us, all we really knew about that was like, okay, so they're like open to dating other people. Like, is that what that is? But I'm aware that each relationship has its own set of rules when it comes to that. So I wanted to kind of pick you all's brains about your thoughts about open relationships. Have you ever tried or been in a full-fledged open relationship? And was it a success or a failure? And I'll share my tea too, so don't worry. We'll be spilling tea together. But who wants to go first? You know I'm good for putting you on the spot.
Danielle wants to go first.
I mean,
I went first.
I can also go first. I can also go first if you would like.
Oh my. Let me just get it out the way because I ain't in none of them. But any of the M's.
Okay.
Honestly, I have tried. Okay, disclaimer. I'm a good girl now. Huh? I done found the Lord. I am saved. Jesus. But back then, before I knew who him over there was, I was a little fresh and a little fast, okay? And I tried it. And believe it or not, some men talk a great game, but them over there can't handle none of that. So it was a yes, we can do this. And then it was a, so you over there? You know I was going to be over there because I said I was going to be over there. Why are you acting like you and I'm over there? You doing a lot of nothing. Calm down. Calm down. You doing a lot. So, yeah, for me, it didn't work. Because if I say this is what we're going to do, I'm very honest and open with everybody. Everybody claims they are. But not everybody is on that maturity level to handle that. But now that I found the Lord, huh? One man.
We don't need no disclaimers over here, girl. You are good with us. This is a judgment-free zone over here, okay?
Yeah, girl, but I don't know who is listening who know me.
Anybody from any transplant from Sister Talk, you know how holy Miss Danielle is. All right. Ooh, this is her past.
All right. Shondo.
This is her past.
Right.
And it's okay because we like to throw it back at times just to talk about things that have happened. That doesn't mean they're currently happening. But we learn from our mistakes. Sure. So I'll go next. Mm-hmm. So open relationships to me, I think that it's extremely important for both parties to be on the same page. And I feel like the one time I did give it a try, it was a complete fail. And it was a complete fail just simply because there were several reasons why it was a fail. The foundation wasn't right because essentially, I think that, you know, the guy I was dating at the time, he wanted to be in an open relationship. He was moving away, and I guess he felt like, you know, he wanted to be free in that way to explore people who were going to be in the same city as him. And I was like, all right, you know what, fine. If you feel so inclined, if that's what you need, I'm good with that. You know, we can try an open relationship. Now, I don't think that he even thought about me exploring anything openly, at least without him. And I actually didn't, but I think the point was, is that it became very clear that when he said he wanted to be in an open relationship, he was really thinking extremely selfishly. So then he started making decisions that, you know, were selfish and that weren't great for our relationship. So that there was a quick and swift end to that open chapter of our saga. And I think maybe he realized he wasn't mature enough for that as well. Just simply because we said we were going to be honest with each other and that's not what went down. And then, you know, he got it into his head that I was dating other people, even though it would have been okay if I was, but I wasn't. And he still, you know, had like this huge meltdown. about it, you know, and I was not even talking or dating anybody but him.
Not
I
didn't
even
have the meltdown.
He had
an imaginary meltdown.
He had an imaginary meltdown, and it was just so strange to me, but he was extremely insecure. And so that's another thing. You cannot do that if you are not secure. Both parties have to be secure in what they have and in themselves. And that was not the case. So that's why it didn't work for me. I feel like in a relationship, I've never been in a position where I felt like it could be something healthy in my life. That particular time was not healthy. I think it can be healthy between people. I just have not been in that place mutually with somebody else. So that's hashtag imaginary meltdown.
I just wanted to document that real quick because I feel like that definitely needs to be our episode title.
I can't.
So, all right.
Yeah.
I'm going to. How do I feel about open relationships? I respect open relationships. I think that it's a beautiful thing. If that is the chemistry that you have and that's the foundation that you have, I will say that it's not for everyone. As far as me, I could see myself in an open relationship if that was the foundation of how the relationship started. So if I was friends with two or three people and we just, for some reason, fell in love with each other like that and we were like tight as fuck and just close, then I guess. But what I can't do is kind of like forcefully hunt for an open relationship. I can't be in a relationship with a foundation of monogamy and then try to force it to be polyamorous. I can't do that because that's not. Those are different foundations. Like, I think we've all been in situations where we've been in some group situations where things have turned a little bit up off of maybe a little.
And don't speak, right? I said, ooh, don't speak for me.
Things happen sometimes, okay? People out, the homies know what I'm talking about. So there are situations, I don't care, the homies
okay.
know. There are situations where I can see if something happened and you as a group decided to move forward with it in terms of a relationship. I can see that being a foundation, but when you're dating someone on the premise of just the two of you, I don't think that it's not that easy to decide, oh, we're going to open up the relationship. If you didn't come into the relationship with that foundation, you can fuck things up because whose decision is this? Now, if it's both people's decisions, still you can fuck things up because why are these people now saying that they want this versus in the beginning of the relationship saying this is what I'm looking for? So I think that things get really dicey when people try to switch up the tempo, and I'm not for that. At this place in my life, I can't say I'm not open to open relationship, but I just don't see that in the cards for me. I feel like I'm in a place where I want to take relationships very serious and I'm looking to settle down and things. And I guess if there was a situation where I happened to run into a group of people and I'm like, hey, let's all get married. I don't know.
Polyamory at its finest.
I don't know. I don't live a lifestyle where that type of thing is like typical around me. So I don't think that it would happen for me. And I'm not looking for it. I'm very much content with one person to love and one person that loves me. So
I'm not gonna
lie, more than enough.
I have a warped sense of the way I think sometimes. So for me, when I was doing the open relationship thing, for me, it's we're dating. It wasn't like, oh yeah, I'm so in love with you. And I'm so in love with you. It was for me.
That's true. I think that's what Shan was talking about in the beginning,
too. Yeah, I can't see myself with two other people going, yes, I love you both. Or rather, no, I could say I love you both, but I can't be in love with you both. So for me, if you're dating one on one people or you're doing this thing, for me, it's that's what it is. You're dating. But when you're in love, like I said, it's my warped way of thinking. I could only do it with one person. It's just weird.
Because it takes a certain amount out of you to be romantically, not even just involved, but enthralled into like a relationship, a romance. That's, yeah. I mean, it's a lot. It's that connection. It's a lot. And, you know, with the whole polyamory thing, I think that one thing that I realize is that each dynamic is going to be different. Like, you know, you may get a certain thing from one person, whereas another person provides this. This one person in the relationship might provide the emotional support that you want and the emotional connection.
Somebody's going to
lack. Absolutely.
Somebody's going to lack something that they need.
Sure. Because everyone lacks in something. Everyone isn't, you know, 100% great at everything. It's tough, but I mean, because we're all looking for that person doesn't exist, and so a lot of people feel like because that person, and I think that was kind of the reasoning, my ex-boyfriend, the same one in question, he had been in several open relationships before, and I guess his logic and reasoning was, it's like, you're not going to find everything that you want in one person, so you might as well, like, I know, what a way to think, right? I mean, but also you're not going to, but you got to find that other stuff within yourself. That doesn't mean date everybody who's going to give you, you know.
Older, I'm always like, look, I barely like the one I do have. Do I really want another one stressing me? Go sad.
I'm screaming. You know, facts. To be completely honest, facts. I'm dating and I really like the one that I have. I can't even say I don't. But when I think about being in a relationship and dating, I guess for me, it's like, what is the intentions of dating if it's not to develop that future? If I don't see a future in it, I'm not going to date you. So if I'm in a relationship with you, it's because I'm invested in seeing that through. What I will say is that, and this is probably not true, it just, for me, it seems that if you are in a relationship and let's say you're not getting everything you want in a relationship and you guys decide to find it elsewhere, there's going to be no tension that forces you two to change and adapt. It's going to be like, okay, well, I don't give you this and go out there and get it. And, you know, there's no change in adapting and growth. And for me, I'm very big on being able to grow with my partner, being able to change, being able to understand new perspectives of life first and foremost. Because even if things doesn't work, I should walk away more enlightened having been with you. If you're with somebody that just doesn't take you there, it's like you kind of wasting your time as an adult. But I'm very much invested in growth and I want to grow. And I expect that there are going to be things about my partner that I don't like. I expect there are going to be things that I want that my partner doesn't have. I expect those things, but those are not deal breakers. Right. I don't need them so bad to the point where I will sacrifice everything else that we do have. So
right, and it's a balance,
intention, you know. And for me, I see like a lot of people don't date with intentions anymore. It's like, I'm in this relationship, but it's not intentional. It's, some people are in a relationship to say, I have a boyfriend, I have a girlfriend, and we're gonna be together, but their intentions aren't really to be together. Sometimes it's, let me be with you until hey, shawty. You know what I mean? Yeah. Nobody does it intentionally.
Sometimes they just a placeholder. Sometimes it's
the there you go.
Yeah. You know, and I read an article not too long ago, and it really made me think. They say, like, okay, so basically, you know, everyone dated wrong in their 20s. In your 20s, what you're supposed to do is you're just supposed to date to date. You're supposed to date around and see what you like. You're not really supposed to date with intention. Intentions that are too serious, because you might end up settling down before you really know yourself and what you want. And I can agree with that to a certain extent. I just feel like I'm just not in that place in my life anymore. I, in my 20s, definitely took it way too seriously. And so right now, instead of just dating around to get to know who I am, I'm just not dating at all. So I can get to know who I am, because I'm just not in the place where I can date without intention, because it feels dumb. You know, it feels,
I can attest to all of it.
It doesn't feel, I want to date with purpose. And until I'm ready for that, I just won't date at all. You know, that's kind of the wavelength that I'm on right now. Like, we can converse, but unless I feel, you know, a purpose driving me to converse with you, unless I feel like I'm about to elevate and you're coming with me and let's go on a ride, unless it's like that, it's not giving.
I wish that article came out when I was younger. Honey, I was engaged by what, 19, 20, had a baby at 21, and was been married by 22, and by 30, I was like, yeah, I need a divorce. This is not.
Damn.
I'm who I am, and you're not who you are, and I grew, and you're still the same, and I don't really like this. And everybody's just like, you can't do that. Watch me. I wish I wrote that. I really wish I had that article prior to.
You know, I'm thinking that I feel some of that. I feel the need to know yourself before going into a relationship. But I also think that the journey to knowing yourself is different depending on your culture. Like, we have a very Americanized way. Like, if you were in a culture that had, like, arranged marriage, or you came from wealth, like royalty, your intentions would be quite clear from a really young age, and who you are would be pretty, it'd be pretty solid. So you would be a person that can get married at 20. You know yourself, and you know where your life is and where it's going. I do think that it varies from culture, and sometimes the less you have, the less you know about yourself. And I don't mean in terms of possessions and things. I mean in terms of history, in terms of tradition, in terms of legacy, in terms of feeling grounded and connected to something greater than yourself. But I feel that if you have those things, I wouldn't say that you're not ready. I was also engaged by the time I was 19, but I didn't know myself because I didn't have those things, not because I was 19. You know, it had nothing to do with my age, where the things that I've grounded myself in the past 5 to 6 years, they're not things I couldn't ground myself in before. I just didn't have the background that led me to that type of a grounding. So I think it comes a little bit of that, because our relationships for the future is a mirror of the relationships in the past. And if you've had a setup where you come from certain things and you already know that this is what I'm going to do, I want this marriage, I want this, 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 and you're grounded in that, I think it's fine if you do. I'm just saying it doesn't really have much to do with age sometimes.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I think that the article is probably geared towards the Western world, Americans. And specifically, I believe it was geared towards Black Americans. So I know that some of our experience, right. I know that some of our experiences with dating.
That's different.
That's what I said. It is a little different. So, but thank you for all of that insight, you all. Thank you for sharing, you know, getting personal, sharing your experience. As always, it has been a delight.
Yes. Well, we are going to swing into mental health and society, which actually is kind of going to sum up a lot of what we... Don't you just love when the segments just melt together like butter?
Meant to be.
Choreograph them? Yeah. The topic that we're going to talk about kind of melts all of the things that we were talking about in this episode. So let's go ahead and jump into mental health and society.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. All I'm offering is the truth, nothing more.
Okay, so the first, I'm going to talk about two concepts pretty candidly. I'm going to draw from a lot of the experiences that you guys shared. And I want to talk first about erasure. And I want to circle back to diversity with neurodiversity. So let's start with neurodiversity so you understand where I'm going with this. So neurodiversity, by definition, is understanding and appropriating the range of differences in individual brain function, behavior traits regarded as normal behavior in the population. So when we're talking about stigmas against people that have autism, what we're really talking about is that there is a normal brain function and there's a normal way of behaving, and any other brain or any behavior is abnormal. That's what we're really getting into. So people that advocate for neurodiversity, they advocate for people that speak differently, that have speech impediments, that have different thought processes, that have different behaviors like tics, all of these different things. because it separates you becoming diagnosed for the sake of treatment versus you becoming diagnosed for the sake of how you're going to be treated and how you're going to be streamlined into a different part of society. So the way that that ties into erasure is because erasure is when we kind of, by definition, try to erase a population. We use our language to minimize and erase the importance or the presence of a population. So an example of that would be, let's say, bi erasure. Bisexual erasure is the erasure of the importance or the validity of bisexual and bi plus people. And the way that that translates is bisexual is not a real thing. You're confused, you're greedy. So a lot of language that trivializes it until it's erased into nothingness. This happens very much so with Black women. We talked about this on the last episode in terms of Black women experiences in society, particularly with the job markets and in corporate America with our glitch homie Lexi. So erasure to me, erasure and lack of diversity go hand in hand, because when we don't have diverse realities, when we don't have diversity in our conversation and we don't have diversity in our community, we're rubber stamping one way of existing. And anything that's not that rubber stamp, we're alienating. So I wanted to bring that up a little bit, and I wanted to kind of give the spotlight and just kind of go around and talk about any experiences you may have had with erasure, or any experiences where you were estranged or set aside for your differences because you were not like the quote unquote group.
I feel like my first experience with something like that, coming from a predominantly Black area in Atlanta, DeKalb County, and going to predominantly Black schools, you know, the experience that I had education-wise, you know, was mostly Black. I was immersed in that culture. And so I did have the opportunity to go to a different part of Georgia for a writing competition. And I was the only Black girl in the room. And we had an hour to do our writing prompts. I thought I did a pretty good job. And, you know, I got my paper back and I just felt really alienated. Like, it didn't feel like even the critiques on the paper, they felt just a little almost like dismissive, like you wouldn't be able to write intelligently about whatever this is. Like, it was just kind of a shocker, because I'm coming from a place where I was always like the smartest person in the room, you know, the best writer in the room. And so that has always kind of that sat with me, because it always kind of tortured me. Like, is it because my writing was really that bad, or is it because, you know, I was automatically judged for being different in the room? You know, it might have been a little bit of both. I'm not really sure. But I do know I didn't like the feeling that I had when I left there. And, you know, it wasn't the last time that I stood out in a room in that way, but it was the first time that I was kind of fully aware of that. And of course, I did not place in the competition or anything like that. But it's one of those things where, you know, because it's something like a competition and there are judges, people can always justify their choices. So, but in my heart, I definitely felt like it was a race thing. And that was my experience with that. I felt like the notion was that as a Black girl, I would never be able to win the contest anyway, you know? So the comments on that were given to my paper were very like dismissive. And so, yeah, it was an interesting experience. That's kind of like what you were saying, but it was my first time just feeling like,
yeah,
different, you know, in the room. So.
Yeah. That's certainly a form of erasure. And first of all, I'm sorry that you experienced that. But in addition to that, there's something so crippling to be erased at a young age. It's something very crippling. And I've said this before when I've opened up about my traumatic experiences. I've said regardless of all of the things I've been through, the worst thing that happened to me was the appropriation of teaching me to erase myself. And I think that there's something really, really critical in understanding that kids are small people and they matter. You know, you can't just, I don't know why we just write kids off as like less than adults and insignificant. I don't know if we think that they're not going to remember or that it doesn't matter, but kids, our psyche doesn't really change that much over our lifespan. Our bodies do, and we apply our psychology to different circumstances as we're exposed to them, but we're all big ass kids. We're still the same being, you know, we have the same mind. We have the same mind, and we tap into that. The closer we get to that innocence, the more beautiful of things we can produce. We're never going to stop being who we are as a child. We will learn to be differently, but who we are inside is who we are. So I think that the world just needs to take a step forward and treat our children with more integrity and respect.
I agree. They are full people.
Mm-hmm. But what about you, Danielle?
For me, I remember when I first came to this country. It was, you know, I'm from the islands. And when I first came, I started, fourth grade? And, of course, right off the bat, it's, what is she saying? And I'm looking at them like, I know I'm speaking English, but okay. But then it was the teacher pulling me to the side, maybe like a week or two later, and was just like, oh, your school records came, you know, from where you're from. She's like, oh, so like, you guys are like really actually smart. And I was like, sorry, what? What do you mean? And she was just like, yeah, I'm looking at your grades and you guys are actually smart. So for me, I was confused because I was just like, was I supposed to be dumb because I came from a foreign country? I was like confused. And then she saw the confused look on my face, and then she was just like, oh. But then another person comes in and goes, yeah, so we're thinking we need to just put you in high school because of your grades. And she was just like flabbergasted, like she was so shocked. And I'm just like, yeah, because we can read and write where I'm from. Like, we don't use rocks, okay? We're not cave people. But she was really in awe, like, oh, you guys are really smart. Like, you know, and I'm just like, it was the most uncomfortable feeling in the world. And then, like, maybe a month later, another girl came, and she was just like, well, since you guys are from the islands, what is she saying? And I'm like, but she's speaking English, miss. And why are you coming to me to, you know, like, yeah, it was just, it was odd. I hated every moment of it. It was so uncomfortable. And when the adult did it, it was easy for the kids to be like, oh, yeah, ha-ha, and start making jokes. And I'm just like, wow, okay. Yeah, I hated being here for, like, the first year of my life. I hated it. And it was an adult that started the whole uncomfortable thing for me. Yeah.
That's a goddamn shame.
Oh, my God. I would... For me, it also was adults. Mm-hmm. I was, like, in a pattern of, like an ongoing nightmare that just kept getting reaffirmed by new adults. But the first time that it felt erased, like I felt like I had just literally been rubbed off of the planet, like completely invisible, was by an adult. It was in middle school, and we had this substitute teacher. No, is middle school, junior high school? That's the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I always would get picked on and bullied a lot, like all the time. But he would pick on and bully me as well in front of everyone else, which justified everyone else treating me that way. And every now and then, like, some of the kids would be like, don't do that to him, stop treating him that way and stuff like that, which it still feels bad. You know, it's just a different type of bad. But we were outside, and this is at the time that I had went to a much smaller middle school. Well, I guess to a lot of people it's big, but to me it was pretty small. Small enough for everyone to kind of know everybody, and all of the classes was on one floor. So that was different because the schools that I had been to, even in elementary school, was like 3-4 levels and stuff. So we were outside. It was like a really nice day. It was like one of those nice, springy, let's just go outside. You know how the teacher just be in a good mood? Like, you know what, y'all? Let's just go outside type thing. And he was never my teacher. He was never my teacher. But he used to come specifically into my classroom to bully me, especially if my teacher wasn't there. He was never, ever, ever my teacher. But it was one time we was outside in the park, and everything was good. I had avoided him the whole time. Then everybody had to line up. So you have this whole school lining up, and he made everybody be quiet. Like, everybody had to be quiet. There was no other teachers around him. And there was other people in the park, too. Like, so he drew a lot of attention. He would call me boy. He never called me by my name. He was like, boy, what are you looking at, boy? And I'm like, I won't say anything. And he was like, yeah, you better not say nothing, you faggot. And the whole school just died laughing. Like, there was some people that was shocked, but everybody just died laughing. And I just stood there. We're in middle school, you know, you awkwardly tall and shit. I'm just standing there like, what the just happened? And I literally felt like completely erased. I was like, wow. Because at that time I was like, I hope that I'm invisible. I hope that no one sees me. And that set the tone for like the next, because that was only in what, like 6th, 7th grade? So middle, I'm still in that school for 8th, you know, 7th and 8th grade. So that was like the most intense time. And I remember when I had graduated, luckily, it was all black school, so we did have a pretty tight community. But I remember when I graduated, and he came up to me and he asked me, he said, oh, when you make it in life, are you going to remember me? And I was like, why would I do that? Like, you've tortured me for 4 years voluntarily for no reason. Like, if I see you in life, I'm probably going to push you down some stairs. And I felt that way until I was about not feeling that way yesterday. No, let me stop. No, but it was giving like 26. Like, I was really feeling that way. But yeah, and then I eventually went on to life and accidentally became a teacher myself for kids with special needs and things like that. So I think I got to heal my own trauma through helping them heal from theirs. So, but thank you guys for opening up and sharing that. This was a really transparent episode, and I love it because this is our last glitch, homie, our last little piece of family.
For now, this is our last glitch, homie, for now, but you always can come and vibe and listen to the homies. We are dropping episodes every other week, so make sure you catch up. If you're listening to this episode right now, go back and listen to the ones that you didn't listen to.
Yes.
Yes. And also follow us on Instagram at The Bridge Millennial Podcast on Instagram. We are The Glitch Homie on Twitter. And I am Shannon Ashlea on Instagram. And on Twitter, I believe it's at Shannon Ashlea. I'm on Twitter all the time, you guys, but I'm like relatively like, this is a comeback. I'm kind of new to it still. Guys, please, please follow me on Twitter. I like to talk about the shows that I'm watching mostly and some pop culture shit. I love to laugh. So follow me on there. And Danielle, where can they find you on the World Wide Web?
Every single thing Facebook, IG, Twitter. It's all the Makeup Monster, but it's not. Makeup, MONSTA, Monsta, not ER.
Got it. No ER. It's all Monster. All Monsta. Right.
And with my sister talk, it's two S's. So it's SSISTERTALK. Yes. And don't forget to follow my baby's page. He's awesome.
So. Yes. Make sure that y'all hit all of that stuff up. You guys can find my me all socials at Just Rob's World. And I want to just reiterate, make sure that you listen to all of these episodes. We're going to be coming up on the end of season one, but we have some really exciting things planned for you guys in the summer. And I want to make sure that y'all are getting all the inside jokes. So make sure that y'all go back and listen, because we will be bringing some stuff up. Okay.
I have a question before we leave. Shannon, whatever happened with them neighbors, girl? How did it turn out?
I have a really quick update for you guys. So
the homies want to know.
And I was at the thing like, what happened?
So
I was invested.
So as you all know, I went up there very heated, very on 10 because they make a lot of noise. They're like extremely inconsiderate. Whoever laughs up there laughs like a hyena. It is so loud. Like everything they do, I think that they lift weights up there. So they're like dropping weights at certain times of the morning, of the night. And it's just been a struggle since I've stayed here. But there was one night where Passport Poppy, Blake, and I were up watching West Side Story, the new musical, and because we love musicals. And I guess we were blasting it. I did not realize, because we were having a good old time. Of course, we were like, oh, the vocals, oh, the choreography. And I hear like some banging, and I'm like, was that? And then he like comes to the door and he's like almost literally on his knees, you guys. He's like, I know that we've had issues in the past. I just want to say I'm so, so, so sorry for that. But please, can you please turn down the TV? I can hear every single word. And I was like, ooh, my, how the
you
tables have
lying.
Turned. I said, my, how the tables have turned. And, you know, I stay humble. I said, well, you know what? I don't have a problem turning it down. So have a good midterm in the morning, boo. Because I'm going to kill you with kindness. All right. But there have been, right, there have been no further altercations. But it's tough. They're college students. So it's just like, mm-hmm. I had to like get in that ass and be like, hey, this is not a dorm that you're living in. So please be cognizant that real grown people with families live in these apartments next to you. So keep it the fuck down. Okay, but also somebody also took a shit in the washing machine the other morning, and I found it.
No, they didn't.
I don't know if they had to climb up there, but there was like a t-shirt in one of the washing machines, and I wanted to use two. So I'm like, all right, well, if I just need to move this t-shirt out of here, I will. Child, I moved the t-shirt, and it was a big fat turd underneath, and it had been smeared. And I was like, what the fuck? And it's just like, and I had to call the property management, and she's like, they did what? I'm like, see, it's shit like that. Not no pun intended. Shit like that. Like, I could not that morning. So there are other things. But we're gonna keep it right there, homies. That was a little personal update about what the fuck is going on where I am
I just
at.
Can't.
It was, I don't want to discuss that any further. Just know the shit stank and it was not okay. And I hope whoever it was made it to a bathroom that evening. Okay, but we will catch you next time on the next episode on the next episode of The Bridge. Holla back, homies.
Bye-bye.